WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. Wes Moss here every Sunday morning, 7 minutes past the hour. And kind of like a rainforest out there today. 70% chance of showers today. High of still 85. Rain continuing into tomorrow with a low of 68 and a high of 82. Phone lines open 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. So if you're listening in Texas or California or Michigan or my home state of Pennsylvania, my alma mater state of North Carolina, good morning. The number 1-800-WSB-TALK. We want to answer your calls and your questions, whether it's an IRA question or an investment question or political economic question, or it has to do with your company giving you some sort of offer like we see so often, whether it's IBM or AT&T, seemingly very active these days with these early retirement buyouts or just slightly early retirement buyouts. Hey, you thought you were going to work 3 more years. We think you might only work another year and a half. What are the economics behind those numbers? They can get super confusing and something we love to help folks decipher and really understand. So that's a pension versus a lump sum question. And it might have to do with early retirement. That's why we're here on Sunday morning. It's a big part of what we do. It's an awful lot of fun. So thanks for joining us here on Money Matters on WSB Radio. Again, the number here in the studio on this rainy, warm Sunday morning, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to the phones here with Robert, who joins us.
Evidently, I'm looking at the wrong thing here. What do you got, water?
No, Robert, I think you're talking to...
You got a special water? Or
I think he's talking to like... It sounds like he's talking to one of Dave Baker's guys. I think it was like he was calling into the Home Fix-It show. So, Jason, if you tell him that we're actually back in live, I'll get back to him in a minute, and we'll go to another line here. We'll go to Mark, who joins us. There we go. Mark, who joins us.
Hey, Wes.
Mark, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. As we continue to go to the phone lines, what's going on? How can I help?
Okay, two points. First of all, I'm a big fan of your book. I love your book. I'm rereading it. I'd love you to give some points of what you would change in recommendations today versus 2014. And I have a second thing. I want to follow up the guy from Lilburn who talked about the fixed index annuities. Vanguard has a variable annuity with a guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefit for retirees, basically best for people in their 60s or older.
Got it, 65 plus.
Right. There is no surrender fee. No surrender fee.
Got it. So Mark, that's a very, very different, a Vanguard variable annuity, totally different concept than a fixed index annuity. These fixed index annuities are produced and distributed by insurance companies, not investment companies. And they are products that will give you some sort of tie to really whatever index. It could be S&P 500, could be the NASDAQ, could be, I've seen it tied to the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index. So there are tons of ways to tie it to something. The problem with an index annuity is that the way they cap their monthly amounts are very punitive when it comes to really having a real rate of return. I've seen families come in that have had a fixed index annuity for a decade, and they've ended up with a 1% annualized rate of return, even though the market's up 100%. I've seen that over and over and over again. The way the formula works for the insurance company, they're not actually investing in the S&P 500. They're just tying your returns to that so that they effectively just have to credit you whatever the formula says, even though what they're really doing the money is just sitting in some sort of bond account. So remember, the difference between equity markets and bonds, very, very different. If bonds are up 20% over a decade and equities are up 150%, there's no way they can just credit you 150% or even half that. So what happens with these products is they're very misleading. They make you think that they're, hey, you know what sounds like a really good deal? I'm going to get half the market upside with zero down. That's how people perceive these equity fixed annuities. They perceive that, oh, that sounds like a good deal. Up about half, and half is, you know, half of 10, long-term return is about 5, but then zero downside. That's how folks perceive these investments, and that's very misleading and very wrong. A variable annuity with a lifetime benefit works in a very different way. These lifetime benefits on variable annuities are typically will give you a guaranteed rate of income off of what very often is a fictitious amount. You've got your actual cash, and then you have what's called a hypothetical basket of money. And variable annuity lifetime benefits are typically based off your fictitious bucket of money. So that's a whole different conversation from what you were asking about with index, or what the caller earlier was asking about when it came to index annuities. To answer your first question, has anything changed from the book? The fundamentals in the book about money and happiness are still the exact same fundamentals 3 years ago as they are today. Retirees, I see, and even more so today, as I've met with more and more families over the years since the book was published, since that research that we did was published, I'd reiterate it even more so. And I maybe wasn't even emphatic enough at how important all those five steps were in the book. Do you have enough core pursuits? What are we using our money for? It doesn't matter if it's golf or tennis or hiking or biking or traveling or cycling or our grandkids. It doesn't matter what that is. It's just important that you have those core pursuits. The retirees that have two or less tend to land in the unhappy camp. There is certainly a discussion around the withdrawal rate. Rates have stayed ultra low in the world. And I think that as I'm thinking about doing an update of the new book, your rate of withdrawal, I think there needs to be even a more in-depth conversation about your rate of withdrawal, particularly when you're a really early retiree. One thing I found post-book was the fact that in my mind, when I originally wrote the book, I thought I want 65 in America is still a, if you're able to stop working and still have the same standard of living, same lifestyle, same income for the most part, you're in a pretty rarefied territory. So to retire early, it's even more rare to be able to do that. So in my book, 62, that's early. 60 to 62, super early retiree. What I've found over the years now is that folks, more and more families have come to me over time that are in their late 50s. They're maybe even in their mid-50s, and they're ready to pull the trigger on not working. In the next version of You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, what I will talk more about are the folks that are dipping even younger into the retirement continuum. And instead of pulling the trigger at 62, they're saying, hey, I'm 58, and now I'm ready to stop working. There'll be a greater discussion, Mark, about that retirement gray zone, meaning that, I want to get people to be able to retire as early as possible. Often the solution is some sort of part-time work, some sort of part-time income. Maybe it's hobby income. Maybe it's a second career where you change something completely from a big corporation. Maybe it's your own franchise. Maybe it's some sort of income where it might only be a few thousand dollars a month, but it prevents you from having to dip into your own investment capital for a couple of years. And that's really important for very early retirees. And I'm gonna write and emphasize that even more in the next version of You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. I'm not even sure what kind of title it should be. It might very well be You Can Retire Even Sooner Than You Think. If you have thoughts about that, I'd love to hear what you would, in fact, I hadn't thought about this until this call with Mark. If you have ideas about what you'd like to see in an updated version of You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, or you haven't even read it yet, and you think to yourself, well, that might make some sense for me and my spouse and our family as we prepare in the next year or so for stopping our main career, maybe we transition into a new career, I'd love to hear your ideas. So again, you can always go to wesmoss.com. WESMOSS.com. Upper right hand corner, there's a contact button. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. And I'm happy to take your comments, questions as we start working on a new updated version of You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. Maybe retire sooner, even sooner than you think. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're going to go to the phones at break, so I'm going to wait for just a second. I still want to get to, we still need to talk about what these all-time highs really mean. So as we get into an environment where, in a week where the market's up 0.6% for the Dow, 1% for the S&P 500, 1.5% for the NASDAQ, year-to-date stocks, solid year, Dow's up about 7%, Standard & Poor's dividend ETF that we've talked about for years, up close to 6.5% if you count the income, which of course you do because it's real money, real cash flow to you. S&P 500 up almost 9%, corporate bonds up about 4% if you look at their price plus their interest. So this is, despite all the discourse and the backbiting in Washington and the swirl of investigations, we're having a good year in equity markets. It goes back to earnings. And we're going to talk about those earnings and what they really fundamentally mean for your 401k and your investments after the break. Stay tuned for more Money Matters right here with me, Wes Moss, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. The phone line's open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're going to head to Covington. Cale joins us on the line. Cale, good morning. What's going on? How can I help?
Good morning, Wes. Thanks for taking my call. Very confused about the new fiduciary rules coming up. We have a local broker here in town that's telling us that we're no longer going to be able to buy individual mutual funds and stocks through an individual retirement account. And I want to make sure he's shooting us straight. And
no, he's not shooting you straight. No, that's total. That's total. That's just a lie. That is just an outright lie. The fact that, and here's what is happening with this fiduciary role. There's new rules from the government that is now a big blanket over all the brokerage firms, right? Mm-hmm. And the rule is trying to make sure that the advisory firm has products that are in your best interest. One of the ways mm-hmm. to do that is to charge you a fee, which isn't a bad thing necessarily, in order to have some sort of objective overall advice. The firms themselves, you can, of course, still have individual stocks in a retirement account. Of course, you can have mutual funds in an individual retirement account. 100%. What your broker might be trying to sell you on is that, well, you have to do this new program that my firm is offering in response to the fiduciary rule, and they're trying to get you into some sort of new product platform that their firm thinks is let's say more in line with the fiduciary rule. But and I've already heard that. Remember, the fiduciary rule was on, then it was off, now it's back on, right? The big firms, whether it's Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley or Edward Jones, they've effectively known this was coming, and they are moving forward as if the fiduciary rule was going to happen. Now it is going to happen, but for retirement accounts, the rule only, remember, applies to retirement accounts.
Right.
It does not apply at big firms to non-retirement accounts. So you have $1 million in an IRA and $1 million in an after-tax account. The IRA has to be compliant to the fiduciary rule by that firm. Correct. The after-tax account does not. Does that confuse people? Absolutely. But for them to say that you can't have individual stocks inside a retirement account, that's just, maybe the firm is pushing their brokers to do some sort of platform that is maybe some sort of managed solution. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the fact that you're not allowed to have stocks in an IRA, that's just a total lie.
It's called Guided Solutions is what they're offering through an employer-sponsored simple IRA. is what I'm referring to.
Okay, Guided Solutions is probably the platform name of whatever that particular brokerage company is trying to get you into. And it's going to have either, I don't know if it has ETFs in it or individual stocks or mutual funds, but of course you can have individual stocks inside IRA. Don't let, and this is Kale, I'm glad you asked this question, and everyone listening, don't allow your broker to use the fiduciary rule to tell you something that is not necessarily true. 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead.
Kitchen.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We've got time for, let's say, one to two quick calls. Then I want to talk about where we stand in this market. First, let's go to Linda. Linda joins us on the line from Atlanta. Linda, what's going on? How can we help?
Yes, I'm a federal employee, and I'm about maybe 3 years from retirement, which will give me about 30 years.
Awesome.
Okay, I had my TSP divided into G Fund 50%, C Fund 30%, I 10%, and the F Fund 10%. A friend of mine told me, said, since I'm so close to retirement, let it all go to the L-2020 plan. And I wanted to know your take on that.
The L-2020 plan, so again, for all those listening, Linda is a federal employee. Most federal employees have something called your version of a retirement plan or 401k plan. It's called TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan, tsp.gov. You can go there and look at the investments. It's a really straightforward plan. It's a really straightforward plan where you have really two bond options, G fund, F fund, government and fixed, and then you have CSI. And CSI is common stock, the small cap, and international. And that's it. It's really five indexes, and it makes up all of TSP. In your case, if you use the life cycle fund and you do the 2020 fund, Linda, you end up with about 60% in the G and F fund, which is really, really conservative. And then you have 60% in fixed income. And in your case, Linda, if you get your 30 years and you've got a nice pension that's a monthly amount that you're going to get, right? So you're going to have a monthly pension amount, right?
Right.
Then it might be okay to have your retirement money invested in something that is that conservative, because you might not need to tap into it. I would tell you that it doesn't follow it doesn't follow what I call the 15-50, again, 15-15 stock rule, meaning that if you have a time horizon of 15 years or more, and in your case, you certainly do, what is your age?
58.
So you're young. You're super young. So you retire at 61. Mm-hmm. You've got 20, 30 years of retirement, maybe 40 for all we know. And right. I think to have that much, 60% in bonds, that are right now the 10-year treasury bond yields less than 2.2%, less than 2.25%. It might be overly conservative, unless, Linda, you are squeamish about the market. You don't want to deal with a lot of fluctuation, which, I wouldn't blame you if you don't. But it doesn't follow a rule that I've been talking about for the last couple of years called the 15-50 stock rule. That 15-50 stock rule says if you've got a time horizon of 15 years or longer, you should have at least 50% in the equity side of the market, because you have lots of time to make up for the inevitable peaks and valleys and dips that we'll go through. So just understand that. I like the way you had this to begin with. It had around 50% in the CSNI fund, and I would focus more on C because that's U.S. large cap companies, a little more stable than small cap and international. That's where I would have a little more of a focus over the long run, Linda, than just the L-2020 fund with TSP. Let's continue to go to the phones here. We're headed to Ryan Ely's telling me we're headed to Cobb County with Don on the line. Don, what's going on? How can I help?
Hi. I'm just curious about
how far away from an index fund should a managed fund be so it wouldn't be, I wouldn't consider it a closet or a shadow fund?
So again, what Don, this is a really important question. It goes back to active versus passive investing. The problem, one of the big problems that why mutual fund managers are active mutual fund managers have gotten a bad reputation, a bad rap, is that a lot of them get to the point where they've got these billion-dollar funds and they just don't want to get fired. So they play more not to lose than to win. And in order to do that, what a lot of these mutual fund managers will do is that they'll construct their portfolio that looks all not exactly like the S&P 500, but pretty darn close. So that they're never, ever, and again, you count in their fees, let's say, you never are really above the S&P, but you're never a whole lot below it. And you're paying 1 or 1.5% a year for what Don's asking about, which is, hey, is it a closet index fund replication? And that happens to a lot of funds.
Right. If you put them, compare them, you know, using something like Schwab fund comparers, comparison charts, the charts over 10 years are remarkably similar.
If you go to Google, if you go to Google Finance or Yahoo Finance or any big charts or wherever you want to chart anything, mm-hmm. and you overlay your mutual fund with the S&P 500 and they look like twins, or if they look very similar, if they're cousins, then you've basically got a closet index fund. And that's how you know you're paying a big fee for a fund that's really adding no value. The mutual funds that have over time outperformed the S&P 500, they don't necessarily do it every year, Don.
Right.
But over, let's say, a five-year period, that's when you can see results that really work, which leads me to one of the things that I wanted to talk about today anyway. So Don, thank you for your call. One of the thoughts I have today here goes back to this question of active versus passive investing. There was a really interesting article written by a fellow by the name of Jim Cullen that I want to reference here today. And this goes back to this, what I had originally talked about, where there's almost fake or false news in the investment industry. You know, the more evident, and it's more evident than ever, if you hear something over and over and over, even if it's false, at some point you end up believing it. And that's the real issue in this active-passive debate, because you've heard this drumbeat of, oh, all active funds underperform passive. And that's just really not the case. There's a significant bias in these studies, and guess who's coming out with these studies? Well, companies like one of the main studies that gets cited in the Wall Street Journal is a company citing that passive funds beat active funds, and guess what they do for a living? Well, they sell passive funds. So you've got to understand where the news is coming from. And there's a fellow by the name of Jim Cullen, who I've read about, and you'll find him in Barron's throughout the years, and he's been interviewed many, many times, and he's run several different mutual funds for many, many years. And he reminded me of something that I've mentioned here on Money Matters over and over again. It has to do with Warren Buffett and the active-passive debate that Warren Buffett weighs in on. First of all, Buffett, remember, he's known for active investing. He's picked winners. He's held on to those winners, and his fund has made thousands and thousands of people multimillionaires just by investing in his fund, Berkshire Hathaway, which is very much an active company trying to find companies that are doing better than the rest of the market. So it's through his stock picking that he's made thousands of people multimillionaires. Yet Buffett says that most investors should just buy the index, like the S&P 500, which is kind of ironic, isn't it? So it's odd that his advice is so counter to the way he actually operates and how he was taught. His mentor, which I've written about, Benjamin Graham, wrote about it in my book. I've written articles about this. Was his professor and his mentor. And Benjamin Graham used basically three very straightforward investing principles. He looks at price to earnings ratio, PE ratios, price to book ratios. So the price of the stock relative to really what the all fundamentals of the company would really be worth. So that's a way to look at price to book. And then dividend yield. And the Benjamin Graham wanted to see some sort of reasonable dividend yield from a company. And you put those three together and you found stocks of, quote, good value. And he also preached holding stocks for at least a five-year period because there's a lot of noise in 1 month, 3 months, 1 year, even 3 years. But over 5 years, stocks eventually find their fair value. So let's look at some of the results of the S&P 500, just the index, versus owning only the bottom 20% of stocks on a price-to-earnings basis, mainly looking at relatively inexpensive stocks and not paying a lot for those earnings. The bottom 20% of companies when it comes to what you have to pay from an earnings perspective. So think of this as the 20% of companies in the S&P 500 that are effectively on sale. And the methodology here is you hold that basket for 5 years, then you hold a new basket for 5 years. And you do this all the way from 1968 until the year 2012. That's a 45-year period of time. So again, only owning the bottom 20% by PE, 5 years, then you switch to a new set of the cheapest 20% of stocks by price to earnings. Interesting, you look at each five-year period, whether it's 68 to 72 or 1973 to 77 or 78 to 82, 08 to 2012, the grouping of the lowest 20% of PE based on price to earnings won versus the S&P 500 every single period. So during that span, the S&P 500 index averaged a very respectable, and you've heard this number before, 9.5%. That's a great number year after year. That's an average annual rate of return. So $100,000 turned into $5.9 million. That's a big deal. But the value approach, and this is a study that you'll see from Jim Cullen, the value approach averaged 15%, actually 15.1 to be exact. How big of a difference does that make in terms of dollars over time? Again, $100,000 in the S&P 500 turned into $5.9 million. $100,000 in an approach that ended up compounding at 15.1% over time. $100,000 turned into $57 million. Basically 10x. That's a 10x return over what the market has done. So yes, you've got serious downturns in all those five-year periods. You've got a minus 19, a minus 46, a minus 34. So it's emotion that beats most investors, not the fact that they choose active versus passive, because the numbers are very clear. With the right strategy, an active or thoughtful, even a thoughtful approach to investing can absolutely surpass one that is passive. The results are clear as day. The question remains, can you handle that emotional strain or the emotional roller coaster? That's the real variable that humans and investors need to control. Good morning. You're listening to Money Matters right here, News 95.5 AM 750. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. Go to Wes Moss, WESMOSS.com. Contact button upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and Ryan Ely. Here in the studio, we're happy to get back to you within 48 hours to answer your financial question or even set up a time to talk and go through things that as they get more specific for your financial situation, something we're happy to do. We're in Atlanta, and this is what we love to do. Stay tuned. More Money Matters, your calls, questions, and really what we need to do when we come back is this question about market all-time highs. Where do we go from here? Straight ahead.
Back to Wes Moss of the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. WSB Weekend Prize Pack time. Ryan Ely, what is happening with that?
The WSB Weekend Prize Pack is a pair of tickets to see Barry Manilow live in Atlanta on July 27th at the Fox Theater, produced by Live Nation, and a pair of tickets to see Air Supply on August 11th at Chastain Park Amphitheater, produced by Live Nation. This week's trivia question, Albert Pujols just became the ninth player in Major League history to hit 600 home runs, but he is the third to do so since 2010. Can you give me one of the other two players that have 600 career home runs and have done that feat since 2010?
And he is a what hitter?
Designated hitter.
No, a career batting percentage?
308.
Career.
career. Only Babe Ruth had a higher average than Pujols's 308, and Babe Ruth was 342. He's pretty special, though.
Remarkable human. So we've got to do quick. So let's get to, first of all, third caller for the prize pack, 404-741-0750. I want to answer this question, and we're going to talk more about this in the next week or in the future. We've got to understand if stocks are overvalued as we get to these new periods of time or new highs. And does that mean that our stocks, does it mean they're about to crash? The answer is not necessarily. Markets don't just crash because they reach new highs. The stock market is a barometer that reflects, pretty simply, the net present value of the future cash flow of stocks. That's it. It's always been that way. Not the past cash flows. And so people are often surprised and unsettled by all-time highs. So let's look at it another way, though. By definition, if multiples stay where they are, that means the P/E ratio stays static in a hypothetical world. If they stay the same and the economy's growing and earnings are growing, then technically every day, little by little, we should reach an all-time high. It's not a surprise. It's not a surprise as long as earnings are growing, which, by the way, they are growing today for the first time in a couple of years. It's actually an expected outcome. Expected. So where we are is expected. It's not surprising. Does it mean we're going to fall from here? Not necessarily, but markets don't continue to go up straight up forever. There are corrections. We will have one. It's a matter of time. So just understand that, remember that. But just because we're reaching all-time highs doesn't necessarily mean that it's around the corner. We will stay vigilant, and we will keep an eye on what's really important, the economy and earnings. Today, remember, this is actually a special programming announcement. At 1 o'clock today, Alan Sanders will be on with a special live talk show about terrorism today on WSB. Find me and the Money Matters team. Easy to do so at WesMoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Contact button upper right-hand corner. Continue to stay tuned to the best programming on the planet right here. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.